Yo, what up? Today is July 12th, 2024. My name is Junie, and welcome to the Theta Game Podcast. I'm not a financial advisor, and nothing I say is financial advice. I'm literally just a normal retail trader, just like you. I'm not certified or a graduate of finance, just a trader that started on Wall Street bets years ago. I've lost a lot of money and made all of it back and more after finding a system that worked for me. You can view all my trades for free at thetagame.com/Junie, no sign up required. And email me any questions that I'll answer on the podcast at junie@datagang.com. Lastly, I stream on Twitch every weekday at least an hour at 9 a.m. Pacific time. Come hang out, ask me questions, vent, or just chill. It's a positive environment and everyone is welcome at twitch.tv/realthetagang. I've been using the TastyTrade trading platform since I started my ThetaGang journey 5 years ago. And it feels surreal that I've partnered with TastyTrade and I can focus on bringing you guys and girls the content. If you'd like to sign up and use TastyTrade for your trading journey, you can use my link in the show description or use the ThetaGain referral code, one word, all caps, when signing up. I use TastyTrade every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Pacific time, where I chat and trade with viewers live every morning. Go to twitch.tv/realthetagain if you're interested in joining the chatter and morning hangout. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy today's episode. Okay, we are live and recording now. I don't know why I'm saying that, as we are not live. We are recording, but welcome to the podcast. This week, there was some, the headlines included, you know, inflation going down, which is effectively a good thing. The stock market took a little dip because, you know, that means if the inflation is cooling, it means that there's no rush to cut rates just yet. You know, we'd rather see bad news first and then, you know, cut later. But I think the stock market has shown that, hey, you know what, it's a little top heavy. Let's sprinkle some of that equity or that money back into smaller cap stocks. And by smaller cap, it means like smaller market cap. We're talking about smaller companies. A lot of what is recently been invested is in the larger caps. We're talking about Nvidia. You know, everyone and their mamas is trading Nvidia. It seems like everyone wants to pour money into this giant company. Well, the stock market is being a little top heavy, but this last Thursday, or just yesterday as the time of this recording, there was a large rotation into smaller sector stocks or smaller cap stocks. And we see some of that, you know, rotation still happening today on Friday. We'll see if it happens next week. But if you are more of a fan of like an explain like I'm five explanation of all this, like I am, because I hardly can understand what's going on, you can think of this as the stock market has been really hot, but it's been really concentrated in the larger companies. This last Thursday and Friday following the inflation report, you know, maybe like a rate cut is like a little bit less likely. Now we are considering, hey, we should put money into the smaller cap stocks that have been lagging behind the larger cap stocks so that a rising tide can lift up all boats, right? Like the money that was all made from the bigger stocks are now being rotated into the smaller stocks. The bigger stocks or the larger stocks are still going up, but so are now the smaller stocks. And so this just seems on paper like a pretty healthy bull market, right? It seems very frothy. I think one of the main criticisms of bears these days have been like it's very top heavy. Like all the money is going into Apple and all the money is going to Nvidia, Microsoft, all these huge companies. But we're starting to see the money get rotated into smaller companies. And we like that. We like the money more spread out, a little bit more diversified. We want the market to go up, not too up and not too concentrated. But you know, this is a good balancing. I'm recording this after close on Friday. It's 1:41 p.m. As of right now. And into Friday's close, today's close, there was a sell-off. You know, we had a green day after a nice green bounce after that. Yeah, I wouldn't say like terrifying, maybe slightly scary. You know, yesterday after following the CPI report, the market sort of tanked. All the semis cooled off, you know, because the money from there went to, again, the smaller cap stocks. We saw most stocks green today, which is really cool, especially if Monday, by the time you guys are listening to this, if Monday is green, wow, that is a pretty healthy bounce from what I would say would be like a shock sell-off. I wouldn't say like a flash crash by any means. That was nothing to be considered a flash crash. But, you know, there was a sell-off on Thursday following the CPI report. And, you know, a good bounce today. I'm hoping for a good bounce on Monday, but we'll see. All right, real quickly, in terms of performance year-to-date on my 5K account, which is now at $8,035.05, is up 34.23% year-to-date, which is pretty good. In my 300K account, I'm up $64,234.20. So I'm just going to put 64 divided by 300. And I am up 21.3% in my main account. SPY, as of today's close, SPY stock, we're looking at year-to-date. SPY is at 18.48% into today's close. And QQQ, let's take a look there. QQQ, did it give any up? QQQ is at 22.9%. So pretty good. You know, this market seems definitely bullish. I'd say if you're buying puts, you're definitely buying them early. Not maybe too early, you know. I am learning a lot from the book, and we'll go into some of those learnings today and in a few episodes hereafter. But the name of the game right now is the trend is your friend. It's going to be really hard to try to convince me that buying puts right now is a good idea. I think right now with a lot of the market momentum, we're going to see maybe more green days in the future, or at least more likely green days than red days in the future. Until the narrative shifts, I don't have a plan to change up my strategy. I've already, in the last 2 weeks, I've been really leaning into sort of adding into strength and adding into strength for my bullish plays and adding into weakness into my bearish plays. And that's so far been working. So it definitely feels weird, right? Like, I feel like most people would say, hey, I sell puts on red days and I buy calls on red days because they're cheaper and I feel like they're going to go up. I would say most people think like this, and that's okay, because I used to think like that. I would exclusively only wait for red days to sell puts because it makes so much sense. I want to be paid more because I theoretically think it's a little bit more risky, so pay me for the risk. I will wait for a red day to sell a put because it will be more expensive. But if we always constantly wait for a red day, there's a chance that just going in on a green day today with a cash secured put is better than, say, waiting 5 days or cash doing nothing, waiting for a red day to happen, where then later on that red day, the chances of it going more red is even more because you're getting in at a higher high because you just didn't go in on this green day right now. So it's always a risk reward. There's a push and pull that happens when you decide when to put your money to work and when not to put your money to work. And a little bit of what this book goes into is that push and pull of, like, when should you put the pedal to the metal and when should you ease it, if at all? Or what are some steps on how you can mitigate your losses in case if a bet doesn't go the right way? Over the next few podcast episodes, I want to talk about some of my favorite lessons I learned from this book. I think this is going to be a common thing that I do for the podcast. So if you're not a book reader, dude, I got you. I totally understand. Some people just don't have the attention span or the mental bandwidth to read a book, but your boy is now doing this full time, so he actually got no excuse. So it is my job to read this next book. The next book I'm reading is Thinking in Bets, which was recommended by Major, a friend and patron in the Discord. But the book I'll be talking about today is Best Loser Wins. I can see myself making like the next 2 or 3 episodes of more lessons I've learned from this book. But I'm gonna take a quick pause. I feel my voice is getting a little raspy. I'm gonna drink some water, chill for a little bit, and then I'll be right back. Okay, so kick up your feet and relax, or rather don't if you're driving. But you know what I mean. And the first four notes. I have this like very small sheet of paper. It's like a here's some ASMR for you guys. It's like a field book notepad. Like if you guys remember field notes notepad, like those little tiny notebooks that you could keep in your pocket. It's essentially like one of those. It's like an Amazon Basics thing. I like to put notes in there sometimes, but I ripped it out to use as a bookmark / note taker. I have four lines of notes referencing four different pages. And this one, these four notes cover about, how many pages are in this book? 250 pages in this book. And the first four notes cover the first 100. So this is about a third of the book. Maybe just like a little bit more. So this is going to be a good chunk that we'll initially start with. And it'll be a good tell to know whether or not maybe you're interested in this book at all. So maybe you skip the next two or three episodes. I'll have the show title be very obvious that it's like a learning from the book. And I do have to give another thank you to Major for inspiring me to read a book. I honestly never thought I would read a book. Like ever. But there was like a huge discussion that popped up in the Discord. The one that you can join at patreon.com/thetagang. It's a private Discord that I run. And we're just like a really tight-knit group of traders and nice people that kind of just have good conversations. And it inspired me to read a book. And this book got me past my 55 to 59K profit loss barrier that I've had so much trouble breaking this year when the market had been going up. I'm now at 64K profit, so I've broken through that 59K barrier. And so this year, or this week, I'm sitting on at a very near all-time high heading into next week. So again, very grateful for the community that I'm learning from. I want to share with you guys and girls that are listening right now the four best lessons that I've learned in the first 100 pages of this book, or the first third of this book, titled Best Loser Wins by Tom Hoogard. Wow, what an intro. I said that all in one take and no script. Okay, one sec. Okay, so first one is I have here on page 28. So I'm going to look at page 28. I'm going to skim through it. And you guys are going to have to just be a little bit patient here, because your boy doesn't usually write a script, and we have no script today, just notes. Right. So the very first, within the first 28 pages, this is page 28, Tom makes a really cool observation from brokerage websites in the European Union. So, you know, I'm based in the United States of America. And I don't know whether or not we got these types of laws, but I thought this was very interesting. In Europe, brokerages have to sort of show what the failure rate is of their sort of clients or customers that use their brokerage apps. So you can imagine, like, if Robinhood had to show the percentage of people that lost money, that's how we would think about this. And it is maybe surprising to you, or maybe not. I thought it was a bit surprising. The failure rate, or the average failure rate, of these five brokerages, these include like CMC Markets, Saxo Bank, FX Pro, Markets.com, and IG Markets. It's about like 78, 79, 80% of people fail. And by failing, we're talking about like, is your account lower than it first started? So it's a surprising number. And this point, when I was first reading this, kind of made me feel a little special. You know, I did fall into this statistic before, you know, pre-2019. I didn't really understand too much about options, didn't understand too much about stocks. And, you know, while my gains were like fairly large at some points, my losses were greater. And I got really fed up with that, which made me eventually join the Theta Game mindset. But before that, I was definitely in this statistic. And I thought to myself, wow, I've come such a long way. And I'm now profitable in the market, or is trading stocks on my own. And I'm beating SPY / I'm beating the market. That's so crazy about the journey that I've been on. And yeah, just really, really grateful with where I'm at. But reflecting back to this, most people lose. And that is just one of the best points that this book makes, is that most people lose. And he goes into a little bit about the psychology behind this number. Most people in the stock market are not people that are just dumb, right? These are highly driven, highly motivated people that maybe have a love for numbers, maybe have a love for like working for themselves, have a love for finding little niches of little patterns that they can like sort of manipulate and like make their own edge. People that join the stock market aren't dumb as rocks. As much as we like to clown on like Wall Street Bets and all this stuff, we are highly motivated people. And this failure rate of about 70 to 80% of people that join the stock market is crazy. He makes another good analogy or another comparison to the dental field, which was really cool because my fiance is a dentist. If there was a failure rate of 70 to 80% in any profession, he actually mentions dentists, but if there was a 70 to 80% failure rate in any profession, that profession would not exist. Can you imagine a surgeon failing 80% of the time? You're not going to be a surgeon no more. Can you imagine an accountant, coming up with the wrong forecasts 80% of the time? You're done for. You're not going to be working at that company for long. Any time you're failing 80 to 70% of the time, that's just not a thing. But for some reason, that's a thing in the stock market. Why? You probably think it's because, you know, oh man, people are getting all their trades wrong. People are maybe doing things that are a little bit too risky. I thought all of that too when I was reading it. I kind of thought this was all mumbo jumbo at this point. I was like, well, I don't know what this dude is about to say. But Tom actually shows a pretty cool statistic, and 60% of trades actually win. Isn't that nuts? Like, so if we think that at any given point the stock market is a coin flip, most people are actually correct in their bets. Like, you know, when you wait for a red day to sell a put, you know, maybe you just got paid on the uptrend. You caught a bounce and you're able to exit for green. But the problem here is that a lot of people exit too early to justify that position in the first place. How many times have you been in a long call situation? You took profits off the table early and you might have said, no one went broke taking a profit, right? And you cashed in that gain and you're like, you're super happy about it. But the stock kept on going higher. You're like, dang, I wish I stayed in. That is one of the worst things that you could do in terms of, say, for example, buying long options and taking gains off too early. Because in the long run, you need to make more money than you lose, which sounds so obvious. I know, you're probably rolling your eyes. You're like, oh, this guy thinks he's so big brain. You need to make more money than you lose. So that means even when it's scary, you need to hold on to your calls enough to justify that position in the first place. If you're constantly taking winners off too early, you're in a position where your losses are going to outpace your gains. And just to relay it back, so it just makes a little bit more sense. Imagine you do like 100 plays of long calls. And every time you turn green on a long call, you kind of just get scared. You know, you're like, oh, you know, I want my calls to win because I don't want to just have all of these be losers. So I'm just going to take this off the table and see if I can get in better next time. That can work a lot of the time. But what ends up happening is because you already have a lower probability of winning, you need at least a few wins to go a little bit beyond your expectations. But that will not happen if you're taking them off too early. We're so used to, and me included, so used to saying no one ever went broke taking a profit. But he alludes to the fact that if you do take profits too often and too early, you can't offset your losses. And that makes so much sense to me from the long call perspective. And to be clear, does that mean that we should hold long calls forever until they expire? No, no way. But this is just a reminder to be mindful of when you take profits on your calls and puts that you are buying. When you're on the long side, you need your bet to pay off, okay? And that's actually going to lead us into my next lesson that I really liked. And this comes from a conversation that Tom had with one of his friends. One of his friends, we'll call him Junie, okay? We'll call him Junie. Junie lost a lot of money in the stock market in a trade, right? Maybe Junie lost thousands of dollars. And then another day goes by. Junie is now in another trade, okay? And the trade is doing pretty well, okay? And then Junie decides to ask Tom for some advice. Junie says, you know, I can get out right now in this new trade for green, and it'll help offset my losses from yesterday, okay? And of course, Junie fluffs that a little bit more and says some extra stuff, but we're not gonna go into that. Tom ultimately answers, and I'll read this verbatim from the book. Tom answers back and says, I understand it is a soothing thought to close the trade. However, we are not trading to break even. We are trading to make money. So I thought that related really well back to the last point of, you know, a lot of people take winners off the table way too early. This essentially means that we let the market borrow our money interest-free if we're just going to close it out for break even. There are times, sure, that if you take the profit and run, coming back from a red loss on one specific play, it'll work out some of the time. But when it does work out some of the time for you, you're positively reinforcing that, hey, it's okay to actually just exit too early. And that's one of the things that Best Loser Wins, where the title comes from, because you need to get better at losing. Or I need to get better. We need to get better at losing. Let me say it that way. If you, say, for example, let that trade go green and then maybe stay green, it went back to green for a reason. Momentum is strong. It was red for a long time. It's suddenly green. Why take it off the table if your money is already in play? We're not trying to break even. We're trying to make money. If that decision ends up in a bad result, for example, you didn't take it off the table for a profit, you let it go back to red, that's okay, because we're now learning to become a better loser. Because just because we lost doesn't mean that decision was bad. We knew the risk reward when we entered the trade with the amount of money that we put up. We want to make money. We failed to make money, but that decision to stay in, even after we just broke even and then have the stock go back down, is still a good decision. It was calculated. We lost, but we're trying to become a better loser. We're trying to put our money at risk to win, not to break even. I'm noticing that as I'm, like, you know, talking about my notes and just recording this section of the podcast, I've already kind of covered three of my points. Maybe I didn't like to call out the page numbers, but I mean, just for thoroughness, I basically covered, you know, the failure rate being like 80%, past affecting future profits, you know, when taking winners off too early, especially if it's for a reason of like, oh, my last trade didn't do well, so I'm going to consider taking green off of this trade to make up for the last one. We don't want past affecting profits. We talked about that. Learning to lose. So the conscious effort of, you know, a red play turning green, we don't want to say just take it off the table because it just turned green. Maybe it's worth keeping the risk on and letting it run. And then those were like the main three. I think the last one that I want to leave off with, it kind of was supposed to go with the failure rate being 80%. It was supposed to go with that note, but I forgot to just like kind of mention it. These notes are a little out of order. And this is kind of a sick burn. I feel like, you know, I personally didn't need to read this one. I already agreed with it, but I was reading it and I was like, oh, that's going to make some people upset. Ooh, I know it is. The note here that I wrote down is, it is easier to trade now than ever. So if you think right now, and if you're red in your portfolio and you're thinking, man, is it hard to trade? Tom says it is the easiest now to trade than ever, right? The spreads on options are so much more closer together, less slippage because there's more people just interested in the market. The tools for the market are better than ever. Okay, you can just order everything on the internet in the brokerage app. I don't know why I said internet, but in your brokerage app, you can just like buy calls and buy puts right then and there. You don't need to call a broker to put your order in. And commission, this new standard now is like, it's everything's essentially, you know, commissions are very low. Before, I think like commission used to be like $15 a trade. So you just started off on the bad foot already. And if you wanted to enter and exit, you'd have to call on the phone. Also, now technical indicators are like free in brokerage apps. Brokerages want you to win because you are effectively paying them the commission of whatever you might be paying. Even Robinhood's not free anymore. It's 3 cents on the way in and 3 cents on the way out per contract. Stocks, buying stocks is usually free in terms of brokerage apps. But like, yeah, it's cheaper now than ever. It's more accessible now than ever. There's more indicators more than ever. Brokerages want you to win, so you keep more money in there so they could loan it out. Like, you know that's what they do. But they want you to keep the money in the account. They don't want you to lose it. They don't want you to give it away to someone, you know, by losing. They want you to keep the money in your account. So maybe it's like this, like, portfolio war, you know, like maybe enough people in Tasty are good enough where people are selling contracts to people on Robinhood that are buying contracts and their more money gets into Tasty Trade. There's some of that going on, maybe, you know. I'd be interested to see the failure rates for Tasty Trade and Robinhood, but you know, that's not a regulation we have here in America, though it would be so cool if we had that. But yeah, it's easier to trade now than ever. And if you're red and you're trading and you feel, I don't know, sort of down or a little hopeless, it's okay. It's okay to be red even during green years. It just means that you're still learning and you're trying to find a strategy that really works for you. I think the main lessons that we've learned as a Discord community, the private Discord you can join at patreon.com/thetagang, the biggest three takeaways that I have sort of materialized in my head is, number one, I think position sizing can get out of whack sometimes. And that is in bullish environments and bearish environments. During bullish environments like right now, I could see it being very, very easy that you open up, I don't know, too many cash secured puts or too many buy rights. Too many of anything really is bad. It's hard to get a good sense of what good position sizing is, because you're always at the balance of how much money should I put into the market versus just letting sit cash and sit idle in my portfolio. You always want most of your portfolio in there because you want most of your money to go up, because that's effectively a good trading portfolio, is when you can weather the storms and the rallies with a lot of your portfolio invested. You don't want to just sit on too much cash. And so we're always at odds with just putting in enough so that our position sizing is good, but sometimes it could get out of hand. In April, a lot of us had drawdowns, which we've recovered from, or at least most of us have recovered from. And in April, it was really scary. A lot of people got checked very quickly. It's like, oh, did you have too many cash to keep rates open? Did you have too many long calls open? It was just very telling when someone had too much open or too much invested that they could not afford to lose. Next up, there were neutral options that I think that did not pan out so well either. So for example, short iron condors and short strangles did not perform well. The short puts in those strategies worked out well, but it was the short calls. So short iron condors and short strangles, famous for being option plays that bet that the market will stay flat or just go up a little bit or down a little bit, but you know, reasonably flat. You could think of like a heartbeat monitor. But this year, we've really only gone up. And so a lot of the sort of the neutral strategies like short iron condors and short strangles, they got obliterated, because if we just only go up, sure, we have a little bit more cushion from the puts that we sold, but nonetheless, it's still an undefined risk scenario, so you do have to end up taking a loss sometime down the road. And sometimes it's hard to get out with a loss because we're just not ready for the market to rip because it has to come down eventually, right? But we figure out later it doesn't. And if it keeps on going, it kind of sucks. So far we have position sizing being really important. It's very hard to get right, but it's nonetheless just very important. Position sizing, number one. Number two, neutral plays so far have been pretty bad. Short strangles and short on contours, just because the market has just gone up a lot, very irrationally, just like the irrational stock market should be doing anyway. The stock market is going to do what you least expect. And if you're not ready for it to happen, you could get got. And so while I wouldn't say anybody got their life changed from a detrimental outcome, there was a good sizable amount of losses from those two strategies that I've seen. And lastly, the last lesson, I think, is just being bearish in a market like this has its merits. I think it's really cool if you could time the top and make money on the way down. It's just very hard to do. So position sizing is, again, important. Neutral plays were pretty bad this year, and I'd say bearish plays were also bad this year. Long puts, very, very bad this year. Very hard to win with those. There are oddballs like Nike earnings, aka, you know, minus 20, 23% in a given day. There were also a handful of other bad earnings. But if we're talking about long puts on the market as a whole, maybe you were buying long puts on SPY or QQQ, those were also bad plays. I, for one, had long puts on QQ and SPY, very, very small positions in my main portfolio as hedges, but I still lost on those nonetheless. And I really had no business opening those. They made me feel safer. They made me have more confidence opening up more positions. So I could justify it like that, but I'm not. I'm going to say that I was wrong on those hedges. And you know, they just didn't perform well. And I think that's gives it the proper spot as number three, as the third thing to watch out for is if the market is in a roaring uptrend like this, you just gotta triple check your stuff when you decide to go in on puts. Like, are you just buying puts because you think the market has gone up too much? Well, unfortunately, that's just not enough due diligence. Whew, that's about it. That's about it. Just to recap, just today's episode on, you know, the notes for the book, I just want to just remind you guys that the failure rate of people trading on stock markets is about 80%, okay? So if you're green for the year, you're already doing better than 80% of people, which is really good. Now, the next step is how do you beat the market? And then maybe next is how do you do better than just beating the market, right? The next thing is it's easier to trade now than ever. You have so many tools at your disposal, and the entry of getting into options and slippage being more narrow. There's more incentive for brokerages to help you make money because you pay commission to them. Though even though commission is cheaper these days, you don't have to call in to make trades anymore. You can just do it on a brokerage app. You have all these indicators and all these charts provided to you for free, and it's much more easy now to communicate with other people via Discord and social networking apps to help, you know, foster a community for you to start learning and how to trade. It's easier now to trade than ever. Then later in the book, very shortly after that, I talked about the example of the past affecting your future profits. So if you lose really big, say for example today, but tomorrow you start to win really early, and then you consider closing that new trade green early to help offset your losses before, or maybe it will cancel out the losses from before, that is something that we'll get into next episode about realizing your profits too early. We already put your money at risk. So we're not here to break even. We're here to make money. And that's one of the more enlightening things that I read in the book that helped me flip my mindset for, you know, these last 2 weeks. And then let's see, the last one here, learning to lose. Like, so for example, maybe that plan doesn't pan out well. Maybe for that second play, you should have closed for a small green to help offset your losses before. because maybe that second play does end up turning red. Does that make it a bad decision? No. We get so used to the idea of learning to not lose that we don't effectively learn how to lose, thus limiting our potential profits. I know I sound like a shill right now. Like, give me like 2 or 3 more episodes to help make this perspective more clear. Granted, I do have an entire 250 more pages of insight than you do if you've never read the book before. So it makes more sense to me in my head. Maybe, you know, I could become a better communicator and communicate these thoughts more effectively. But I hope the way that I'm illustrating out for you guys, or at least that how I'm speaking about it, can really start to help paint the picture of, man, am I taking profits off too early? Or, you know, am I letting my past trades affect this great trade that I'm on right now? You know, am I green in this market? Why am I red in this market? You know, I'm having you guys really check in and reflect while you are on the train, you know, on your way to work, while maybe you're driving on the way to work. Maybe you are directing airline traffic, or maybe you are a pilot on a plane. I remember I got a screenshot saying, hello, listening to your podcast from the plane. And so, yeah, just giving you guys mental check-ins to check in with yourself and ask yourself good and thoughtful questions of, how can I get better? Because while I am pretty good at beating the market, I do feel like this year I missed out on a lot of opportunity to do just way better than the market. And we saw a lot of that improve in the last 2 weeks, because I read this book, I think now 2 weeks ago, put it into practice last week. And yeah, like I mentioned in the podcast episode, I was at like a barrier of like 59K profit. Like, my profit loss for the year to date was 59K, and that's off of a 300K portfolio. And just recently, until I read this book, I crossed that barrier and now I'm at 64K. And so it just feels really good that I'm able to put this stuff into practice. And it feels even better knowing that I'm putting stuff that I'm sort of relaying to you guys into practice. I'm seeing what works and what doesn't. If I tell you something from this book and I noticed that it didn't really work for me, I'll tell you. But fortunately, everything so far has been working, and I have a few more of those lessons I will get to in the next few episodes. And this could be a little bit of a recency bias, you know, like, just, it's been like a decade since I've read a book. Okay, so you can imagine that, like, I'm pretty hyped to have finished the book, so I'm very into the book. I mean, this could have easily been a different book, and I'd probably be as invested into that as maybe this one. But this one just really felt good. And being honest, I have started reading a second book. I'm on my third book right now. My second book, I don't want to name it just for right now, because I don't want to decentivize people from reading a certain book right now. But there's a second book that I was reading. It wasn't for me. Like, it has too many math problems in it. It has too much numbers. Like, I'm not at that point in trading where I need to get proven that cash secured puts work, or that like covered calls work. I don't need anyone to prove that for me. I know they do. I needed like a different change in mindset, because I already can make money from the market, and I can already beat the market. I really want to learn how to do much better than the market. I feel like this is the book for me. I wouldn't recommend, again, Best Loser Wins by Tom Hugard to someone that is red. I think if you are red, you need to focus on just being green first, which you can do from just very basic stuff like dollar cost averaging on SPY and all that boring stuff. You got to do the boring stuff first, recalibrate, and then aim to beat the market. After you beat the market, then calibrate to beat the market by a lot. I think that's the order. And Best Loser Wins, I think, is the best book for probably the stage at when you're trying to beat the market by a lot. You need to be already in the right headspace, or else I can see someone that is red in the market reading this book and taking some of the advice in this book the wrong way, maybe in a more irresponsible manner. I've done my best to really try to ease into a lot of these strategies that Tom alludes to, And a lot of the last portions of the book actually emphasize the importance of doing this slowly and at your own pace. But if you pick this book up when you're red and very emotional, you might think of this as like the Holy Grail, and you might just do something a little bit too all in and might end up yourself getting got. So that's my honest review. I think as you know, this podcast goes on in the next few episodes, what you're going to get from me is like this. If you've listened to me on this podcast for, you know, all these years, you guys already know how I think and what types of advice that I like and, you know, how I trade. So you can think of this as like a second reader. Like, you should definitely read these books that I'm reading if you want. Maybe you get a different take, but you can also think of this as like a Spark Notes, like a Juni GPT Spark Notes. So you could just like have this be a metaphorical scan of a book, except I take parts of my favorite parts and just relay it to you. I'm not going to exactly, go, page to page and tell you what everything he says, but I'll definitely be choosing the parts that are relatable to me. And that's because I can actually put those into practice, and you can see me putting that into practice at twitch.tv/realdatagang, where I stream every morning at 9 a.m. Pacific time. Thank you for those that have been showing up to that stream, by the way. I've gotten a few handful of people this week that say, hey, I'm coming from the podcast. I'm glad to see, to put a face behind the voice. And I was like, oh, that's cool. That's cool. It's always nice getting people from different communities, whether it's the website, stream, or podcast, entering a different part of the community. Because there's a podcast group of people, there's a website group of people, and there's a stream group of people. And there's also the Discord group of people. There's like four sub-communities within this entire thing, and it's just fun seeing other people mingle with other people in other communities. So if you want to, again, join in and, you know, chat with me, again, every morning at 9 a.m. Pacific time, that's twitch.tv/realdatagang. From what started as just an idea, then learning how to trade options, then building a logging platform, then partnering with Tastytrade is so surreal to me. If you'd like to trade on Tastytrade, you can see the show description for my referral link, or use the DataGang referral code, that's one word, all caps, when signing up to help me and support the website, podcast, and stream. This podcast, the website, and stream are all made possible because of my patrons at patreon.com/DataGang. Signing up helps keep the services up and alive, as well as pay my own personal bills. I do the website, podcast, and stream full time and is my primary source of income. I feel grateful to be able to do this full time and my focus on providing the best possible service for free. The podcast, website, and stream are all free, and it'll stay that way. Signing up for Patreon gives you a few perks, so check it out again at patreon.com/thetagang if you're interested in helping support. Okay, I want to give a shout out and thank you to the patrons that help enable me to do this full time. Without them, the website and this full-time venture, ThetaGang would not be where it's at without the help of these people. And so, also, one quick emphasis, the live stream is exclusively only possible because of these people that support me on Patreon. Because if I didn't have this extra source of income, I would have to find a 9-to-5 job, and the stream starts at 9. I would not be able to stream if I had a 9-to-5 job. So these people do absolutely carry the stream. These are the people that make the stream possible, but also do help me in keeping the website alive and the podcast going too. So thank you again to Fancy Wolf, Los Pepes, Mods, Upstream Puddle, Ensis 88, Espresso Bean, Joe Quirt, EDC, Travella, Desserts, Kevlar 22, Bachata Thug, Nala, J Perkins 86, Louis BG, Troop 947, T Wall 3252, LPL, Alexander Kerm, Slow Motion, Rustier, Steve Catsy, The Jester, Grandpa 95, Gruffalo, Young Rich, Chicken Dinner, Kaput, Sumatrix, KJ Martin, Statistically Random, Turbo Ricky, Master XC, Benadushi, Theta Collector, Tyler LM, Lord Skeletor, Pig Trader, Major, Tickle Me Elmo, Avrillian, R. Schmitty, YT, Danube 9000, Jayford, LOL, Danger 10, McFly, Spicy Lemons, Husk P, Mr. Integrity, Rooster, Big Dillo, Loido, Bearded Savage, Dang High, Clutch, Ashokabot, Bustin' Justin, Andy V, SWH, JH, Spammy Spam, Arfman, Mamamet, MX7, Vegeta, Plank, Can't Make Money, IRL, and Maltman, 1856. Sweet.
Whew. I already feel super good about the next podcast episode. I feel like these next few episodes are just going to be gold mines to those that, needed the help boost I needed, but they might just not have time to read a book. Like, I definitely see the value add here. I'm already thinking about doing like a YouTube video on it. Like, just like maybe my favorite lesson I learned this month or something, you know, and I pick one of the things that I talked about today, or maybe I pick the topic of the next one. I think the future episodes are not going to have like four lessons in one episode. I'm just going to probably pick one lesson, and then just make that the core, topic of the episode. Cause realistically there aren't too many more lessons. I'd say I have the paper right here. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There's 9 more lessons, and some of them I'm pretty sure can be combined. So maybe I think there's gonna be like 3 episodes maximum more of Best Loser Wins. And I could definitely see doing it in the book that I'm reading right now. It's called Thinking in Bets. I think maybe there's gonna be less notes in that one, but there's definitely good bits and parts in there too. And it's also a pretty good read. Again, I'm kind of understanding that maybe the reason why I didn't like reading before was because I was reading the wrong things. And I hear that all the time given as advice from my book reading friends. But it wasn't until that I actually read this book. I was like, yeah, I read this book in 2 days because I actually like wanted to just know more about what this guy was talking about. And largely, it was just because it was like really relatable. Like I thought like a lot of the thought processes that he was teaching, I was like, yeah, I've already sort of concluded on this. You got anything else in here that I might be interested in or something that might be new? And of course I did find out a lot of new stuff too. But he just builds up a lot of good ethos from someone that is in the market every day, AKA like me. Like I'm very much looking at the market all the time. And I'm relating all these things of like, yeah, I definitely remember closing out of cash secure puts too early. I remember not adding on to this like winning position. I remember, you know, winning on this right now early makes up for my loss from last week. So I'm just gonna close this now. So, you know, just all this stuff that I'm learning is not a good way to look at things. The more I'm catching myself before I even say words like, no one went broke making a profit, but it's so not true. But I'll revisit that topic next week. Let's see what else. So I read a book, I finished a book, and I've been acting on it, executing on it. I bought some puts. I bought puts on Nike, and I bought puts on Rumble. I bought calls or call debit spreads on Intel, and I bought AMD calls. All the calls are up. The puts are down. But yeah, the puts are also a lot less expensive because I'm choosing to be a little bit further out the money. I'm trying new things. I think I've talked about on the podcast before that I wanted to give going long on options a try, and I think I found not the final recipe, but I found the template that I like. I think now exploring the idea of that sometimes options are really cheap for the amount of movement that can be possible. And I'm just now more on board with the fact that, you know, I essentially want to buy calls on green days and puts on red days, you know, or in the puts on downtrends and calls on uptrends, where I think in the past, I would buy calls hoping for a bounce, which could work some of the time,
But, you know, if it's a bounce during a downtrend, then maybe there's a little bit less merit there. So, yeah, I'm doing, again, this every Monday through Friday on Twitch. And by next week, I should have a pretty good maybe not even this next week, maybe just like over the course of the next month, I have a much better understanding of buying long options in about like 30 days, right? Like a lot of my call options expire in December and September. But my puts. My puts are pretty far dated too. I just have a long time on them, so I'm learning the practice of also like adding on to my winners and not adding on to any losers. Like I'm not trying to revenge trade or add on to, say, for example, calls if the stock dips. I'll only add if the stock keeps going up. All stuff I will talk about on the podcast in the next few episodes. But I just wanted to put that out there that I'm actually trying to make these things I'm sharing with you work. Because if they don't work, I'd rather report that, you know, they just didn't work for me. And maybe you can give it a try. Here are the things I tried. And here's some things that I might try to do better. I feel like that insight is good. I don't want to just like blindly read. I mean, that's kind of paradoxical. I don't want to just like randomly read books and give you random facts. I think that's super boring. I feel like anyone can do that. I want to try to apply it to my own trading and relay it to you guys. And of course, the Discord, oh man, I'm sure that they're like tired of me talking about this book, but they always get like the first takes of how I'm like I don't know, trying to get this into my trading system. It's good, man. Like, it's been difficult for me to implement other people's opinions. I talked about this a little bit on today's stream. It's hard to find people that you look up to and respect in the finance space, because it's really hard for me personally to trust anybody of what anybody is saying, because I don't get to see their trades. Like, I don't actually see you and your entire trading portfolio make money. Like, how do I know what you're talking about works? The difference is this book really puts a lot of emphasis on like, hey, I'm not going to teach you like any real big technical indicator or math equation or any of that stuff. They do a really good job of talking about their own real life trades and with the emotions that they felt. And I was like, wow, yeah, I can see that this person's legit. Like, this person's real, and they would only talk about it this way if they actually understood, you know, this particular trading style. This isn't some person that's never traded talking about trading, which also this person also talks about, but I don't know if I'm going to talk about that in the main part of the episode. I don't think I'm going to do that. So, I'll say it here. This is like a little bonus part of the episode for today. Tom Hooger, the author of this book, has a chapter somewhere in this book. I don't want to find it, but I'll just paraphrase. He essentially says that a lot of these trading books that we see, the ones that are very math related and, you know, oh, here are the charts and patterns, a lot of those books are written by people that don't even trade. Right, they just understand there was like a gap in market, or there's some room in the market for to make profits on people that think that they need those types of books. So, you know, him highlighting that and then me reading how his tone is in this book, I'm like, okay, yeah, this person's about it. Maybe over the next three episodes, I like pick out like a few quotes that were like the quotes that proved to me like, oh, this guy's real. But my notes are too vague to actually have any quotes on it. I don't think there's any quotes on here. No, I don't have any more quotes besides the the cold for real quote. What is it like? We're not here to trade break even. We're here to make money. Oh my God. We're here to trade to make money. I thought that was crazy. I was like, whoa, this guy is nuts. I think that's it. Today was really foggy in the morning. It's now lighter outside. It is 3:39 p.m. So it's taken me maybe, I don't know, 2.5 hours to record this episode. Like, when you guys listen to this, it sounds like just one giant run through really quick, but there are a lot of retakes that I have to do because I mumble my words a lot, and I'm trying to work on that by enunciating and maybe slowing down some of my talking, but it's still a challenge for me, and I have to do multiple takes of different things I say. Sometimes I might even say something I don't mean. I'm like, oh, why did I say it that way? It's tricky, you know, talking into a microphone and having your voice recorded and knowing that whatever you record is going to be uploaded to the internet. Shaking the initial scaries off you just got to do it. You get better over time and you get more confident. I think confidence has a lot to do with it. That's for sure. But if you're ever interested in doing like some sort of podcast, I'd say the best thing you got to do is just press the record button. Like, don't even get the fancy material. Don't get the fancy stuff. Just hit the record button and go. Same thing with, I don't know, any other hobby that you want to pick up. The year is going really well. I think for those that are green, you could use some of your gains to pick up a new hobby. I mean, this is a really cool gift that we're getting heading into the latter half of this year. It'd be interesting to see whether or not we get a Christmas rally on top of this year. This is election year. You know, November is going to be pretty nuts. But do we see a Christmas/Santa rally this year? That's also going to be really crazy. That won't be happening for a while. Cool. That's it. Yeah. I'll see everyone next week at 9 a.m. Pacific time in the morning at twitch.tv/realthetagang or on next week's podcast episode where I'll be talking about my next favorite point from Best Loser Wins. Thank you. Have a great rest of your day, and I will talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.